Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is James Dick, your host with North Florida Writer Live. And on this Thursday afternoon in the year 2016, we're going to remember some events that took place back in the 1940s, particularly in the years 1942 and 1944. Those were tough years for America. We had entered into war on two fronts. We were fighting the Japanese in the Pacific, following the horrible destruction that they committed against Pearl Harbor. And we were also under war with Germany, although we were not fighting on the European continent yet, but we were in North Africa. And we weren't doing so well. You see, America wasn't prepared for World War II. We're funny. We always do this. We forget what happened in the past. And following World War I, money was basically not appropriated sufficiently to keep the military up to speed. Meanwhile, Tojo in Japan, under Emperor Hirohito, and also Adolf Hitler's Third Reich had come into power, and they were looking to conquer the entire world, basically, because they were allied together. And of course, December 7th, 1941, is what forced us to call our hand finally. We had been helping the British with supplies prior to that, but we were required to declare war when we were hit by the Japanese, an ally, Axis ally of Hitler. So we're going to talk about today because we didn't remember it. There are 3 days in the month of June. One of them is in 1942. The other two are in 1944, which I think are very, very critical. Those days are June 4th, 5th, and 6th. And they're not the only memorable days, but they are really critical to the ultimate success of the United States at war in World War II. And I think it's just extremely sad that I didn't see it anywhere in the media. I'm sure there might have been a few places, but a couple of talk shows talked about it, but nobody talked about what happened. Because we're talking about the Battle of Midway in the Pacific, and we're also talking about the assault on Normandy as we came ashore on the longest day. But there was a little story about that the day before the longest day, and that's part of what we want to talk about. First of all, let's look at our pictures, and then we're going to play a little bit more music appropriate for the topic, and then I will have a commentary. This is a tribute to all those in our uniform who died, wounded, or just fought in the horrible battles on those days. God bless them all, living or dead. The first picture shows a damaged Japanese warship at Midway. followed by a picture of the atoll known as Midway from the air, not a very big place. There was an American military force there. It's only about 1,000 miles west of Hawaii. Some people call it the beginning of the Hawaiian chain. But it was easily taken after the attack on Pearl Harbor. And we wanted to get our men free. We wanted to take the island back because it offered a decent airstrip. And we also needed to get on the offensive. The next picture shows D-Day. Basically, the first picture shows going ashore as if you're on one of those landing craft when the doors opened and you had to run into the water with the Germans having machine guns and all kinds of things aimed your way. On those first boats that came in, most of the men died before they even got off of the boat, off of the landing craft. That's how horrible it was. But we sent wave after wave, and finally they were successful. Then there's a picture of the main force arriving after the beach has been basically secured. What I mean by the main force, all of the support and all of the things needed to keep the army able to go forward on its push towards Germany. It was arriving. I mean, that beach actually turned into a port. They brought everything in on that beach. And great engineering work by our combat engineers, our signal corps, transportation corps, all of those soldiers, plus, of course, the infantry, which led the way. It was just an unbelievable sight. Then there is a picture of soldiers from the 101st Airborne, the Screaming Eagles, ready to board the planes to fly over Normandy. And they're the ones that went out on the 5th. They went out ahead of time. We'll talk about that in a minute as well. Next is a picture of the Normandy United States Cemetery. Normandy has cemeteries for all the Allies, but in the United States portion of the cemetery, it's just American GIs that died there and were buried there. And if you ever get a chance to see it, it's a very, very heart-rending experience. It's unbelievable what these great men did those many years ago. Lastly, the cross, the Bible, and the flag, representative of America being a country that was founded under God. You know, we are God's creation. All of us are. And when we turn to God for help, He listens. When we turn away from Him, He turns away from us as well. He wants us to come back to Him, but it's up to us with our free will. So I think it's appropriate that we play a beautiful military march. So here is The Stars and Stripes Forever, and we'll be back in just a few minutes for the commentary. We'll be right back. Okay, folks, we're back. That was Stars and Stripes Forever. Wonderful music. Makes you want to get up and just march around the room, doesn't it? Okay, folks, June 4th, 5th, and 6th. They were all great days for American valor and honor during World War II. I had planned on Monday, which was June 6th, to present a salute to the men of Normandy, but also to the men of Midway, and all military soldiers, brave fighters that fought through the war. But we had a terrible tropical storm down here, had some heavy rain, a lot of flooding, and my satellite-based internet connection support was offline all day long. Plus, I was out of power for quite a while, too. So this is my tribute to those three memorable days. Most of us, of course, remember June the 6th. June the 6th was D-Day. It's the day when we invaded Normandy with huge forces, British, Canadian, and American forces, with support from the Free French. Remember, France had been overtaken by the Germans. But most people don't remember the 4th and the 5th. At the outset of these 3 days in history, and now I'm going back earlier to 1942, America was in quite a pickle, to say the least. We had declared war on Germany following the attack on Pearl Harbor by the Japanese on December 7, 1941. After all, the Japanese were allies with Hitler. But we were not ready immediately to tackle the German menace on the mainland of Europe because we had to deal with Japan also. And June 4, 1942 marked the beginning of a turn from defensive action to offensive action in the Pacific theater. You see, Midway, as I said before, is about 1,000 miles closer to Japan than Hawaii, but it's also considered to be the beginning of the Hawaiian chain. And we had military forces there. They were easily captured by the Japanese. Japan was rolling free all over the Pacific area. They had, of course, started in China and parts of Indochina back before we ever even got into the war in the 1930s. But once the war was declared on America, they moved rapidly to the Philippines, Indochina, all those areas to capture everything as well as all the islands. And so we were worried, and rightly so, that not only would they come back to take Hawaii, but they might even come to the West Coast. I mean, that's what was going on. So that day, June 4th, 1942, is the day that we started to make the change. We began the slow trek back for American military resurgence as we finally gained, a few days later on June 7th, a defeat over the same fleet that had played havoc on Pearl Harbor. And it showed that we were getting our muscle back. The shipyards were starting to put out the necessary ships that we needed because we were woefully inadequate in our fleet. And the same thing applies with Army tanks and all kinds of military equipment. By June of 1942, the war machine was really moving well. It was getting going. We had forces, as I mentioned, on the other side. But Japan, we needed to get something going to head that way. And that's what this did. I mean, we needed a victory badly for morale, and we got it. And our fighting men needed to know that they could actually beat the Japanese. So Midway gave us the opportunity to begin going on the offensive, and with it a future capability to focus on Germany as well. And we knew that Germany had to be taken on with force as well. Germany wanted to rule everything. Following the victory at Midway, American forces began the push toward the mainland of Japan, and it was bloody and brutal with names of places no one had ever heard of making headlines back home. Guadalcanal, Saipan, Iwo Jima, and Okinawa were just a few of the places which became topics of household discussion in those days, and it was a slow process. The war dragged on. It lasted longer in the Japanese theater than it did in Germany, but it dragged on until, as you know, August of 1945, when we had to drop two atomic bombs to finally get Japan to commit to an absolute surrender, you know, with no special attachments. It had to be a full surrender or else. And that's what we needed to do. So we got it done, but it was a slow process. But Midway started it, started us getting going in the right direction. In Europe, we faced a different problem, and it required a very patient strategy. The early days of American combat, as I mentioned, were in North Africa, and then they moved to Italy. It was decided to go to North Africa first. Germany desperately needed the oil that came from the South Mediterranean, as well as the Eastern Mediterranean, and it was important for us to neutralize and destroy Mussolini after that to start the pinchers on from the south. Now, we were starting to amass a force to be trained, and it was years of training in England, but it was going to take a while to be ready for that. That was, you know, the largest undertaking of an assault ever. But we had to figure out a way to get past Italy and to get into Germany, and we found that moving men and heavy equipment over the Alps into Germany would be suicide. I mean, they'd be sitting ducks on the mountaintops. And so we had to try and find another way to do it. But the choice we decided was basically almost as unrealistic as going over the Alps. And this brings us to late May 1944. The Allied forces had been planning a major invasion of Europe from Britain for several years. Under the leadership of General Dwight Eisenhower, who was the supreme commander of Allied forces, a huge contingent of American soldiers and British and Canadian allies would invade via an undisclosed location at an unknown date and time. But the Germans knew it was coming. They just didn't know exactly when or exactly where. Now, let me just take a little sidelight here about General Dwight Eisenhower. General Dwight Eisenhower was not the most brilliant of students. He was an average student at West Point. But he had a real gift. He had a gift of working with people and making them come together. And what we had to do is get the egos of some of the greatest generals of the war, but from different countries, to be able to work together to get the job done. I mean, just think of Patton and Montgomery. Montgomery thought he was a know-it-all. And Patton knew he was the best. I mean, that's what we were dealing with. And it took a guy like Ike, as he liked to be called, to make it all work. Speaking of Patton, I think this is kind of interesting, but General Omar Bradley. Now, that's a general that never gets the credit that he deserved. A quiet man, but a very, very capable and smart man and a good soldier, if you will. He was said to frequently tell George Patton, "George, you're the best we've got, but you never know when to shut your mouth." And so he kind of ran interference to some degree for Eisenhower. But we made it work. Ike made it work. And that's the greatness of his military capability, because he kept the forces together and able to work together without chaos ensuing, which is not unusual when you deal with big egos. One of the things they had to do, though, is keep the Germans in France from knowing what was coming. So a major concealment effort was the creation of a dummy army complete with what looked like all kinds of equipment from the air. And the Germans believed it. And they assigned George Patton as the commander of it. Why? Because the Germans wanted to keep their eyes on Patton. They were afraid of Patton. They studied him. Rommel and he studied each other. Rommel, of course, Erwin Rommel, the great German tactician and tank commander. He studied Patton at length. And so when he heard Patton, he's watching what's going on. So he knows that dummy army, which was closer to the part of England which would lead to a invasion of Calais further up the coast, is what they expected to have happen. The Germans began to believe this was the real deal, and they assumed that a major thrust, as I said, would be towards Calais. This stroke of genius played a major role in forcing the Germans to look away from Normandy, although the barriers, cliffs, and the many troop units remained, but they were placed on lower alert. As the final days preparatory to the invasion began, American and British forces were maintained on alert, ready to go on short notice. Weather became a serious issue, which caused delay and consternation for the troops because they were ready to go, but still not knowing exactly when or where. When the order finally came, airborne soldiers of the 101st Airborne, once again, now we're talking about June the 5th, they were the first ones out, tasked with jumping into Normandy, inland of the coast, and finding and destroying the big guns, the huge German howitzers, which were trained on the coastline. They lost many of their soldiers before they even reached the ground, but those who made it safely into France did significant damage to the huge German howitzers, which meant that those guns would not be available the next day. Had they been, many more casualties would have been inflicted on our troops and the ships carrying them across the English Channel. And luckily, the Germans weren't convinced that this was the main force. They thought it was a ruse. They still expected the main thrust to be farther east. The weather was still pretty iffy at this point, perhaps marginal at best, but General Eisenhower, as I mentioned before, known by all as Ike, knew he couldn't keep his troops cramped up and itching to go any longer without it adversely impacting morale seriously. He gave the go-ahead, and every ship available was put into service to ferry the soldiers to Normandy, the actual target, while the German commander, Erwin Rommel, was on leave in Berlin. He was meeting and getting more instructions at the time the battle broke out. German soldiers on duty and in the concrete pillboxes built above the cliffs looked out into the misty coastal morning on June 6th and couldn't believe what they saw. Out of the fog came hundreds of watercraft of every conceivable kind, while the offshore ship batteries opened fire with a vengeance. And we all know the rest of the story. It was tough getting through the surf, the barriers, and then to the base of the cliffs. Many died exiting the landing craft, others on the beach, but the grit and determination of American, British, and Canadian fighters were ultimately successful on what has been called the longest day, June 6, 1944. Once over the top, the Germans quickly withdrew to the rear to reorganize, and they did reorganize, but the push into Normandy was the beginning of the end, although a long and bloody 11 months of battle ensued until the Reich was destroyed and finally surrendered in May of 1945. And as I said earlier, the Pacific War continued until August, ultimately requiring the unleashed power of two atomic bombs to finally convince Japan to unconditionally surrender. 3 days in history, folks. June 4th, 5th, and 6th. June 4th being in 1942, the others in 1944. 3 days which ultimately led to freedom for many who had been under the yoke of tyranny at the cost of many lives. All Americans should remember what they did. It's just a shame that we no longer teach about it. It was almost impossible to find any mention of it yesterday on either print or television news. How sad. This should be a time we never forget. Vowing to remain strong and ready to fight when we must, but always seeking every other alternative to war where possible. God help us not to make the same mistake now that we made prior to that war then. Sometimes it looks that way. I only hope that God will bless America and pray that she may ever stay free. And that's my commentary for today. I told you it wouldn't be very long, folks, but I just thought it was important to remember what those men did. It's just sad that we forget. Anyway, folks, that's my tribute to three great days in June back in the 1940s. They had a lot to do with the fact that we still live as we do and we still have English as our major language, which it should just be the national language. Anyway, that's my show. If you liked it, I hope you'll pass it on to others. It will be available on demand about 10 minutes after we end here. And I also have a lot of other shows, as I've said many times. Go to blogtalkradio.com/North Florida Writer Live if you would like to hear any of them. My next show will be my weekend Sunday morning coming down. It will come up in the next 48 hours, and I'll put it on Facebook, Twitter, and on my blog when it is ready to go. Anyway, folks, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. And tomorrow is Friday, so the weekend's coming. I hope that's going to be good for you as well. And we're going to close out with a song that's not military-oriented, but the words I like in the name because it matches up what I'm asking you to do here. Here's Alan Jackson with Remember When. Bye now.
We'll be glad for all the life we've had.